town you never heard of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
That's right. Podcast for the people, by the people.
There it is, guys.
It's great. Andy is ready for calling the sports games tonight.
I am. We're getting into the thick of it. Only a couple weeks left of the regular season. A lot of these really good teams that we're covering right now are kind of jockeying for position. You know, they don't want to be the 4 seed. They want to be the 2 seed, you know. So it's winding down and it's getting pretty intense.
So Wynn State. That's, you said a couple weeks?
Yeah, girls' state tournament here is in 2.5 weeks. Yeah.
So then do you get sad after basketball's over?
No, it's kind of fun. It's like a relief. Like, we did it. We made it through. And, you know, like, I'm never bored. So, like, then it's baseball.
Yes.
You know, now it's on to baseball.
Okay. So, yeah.
You definitely look the part. We got cameras today so people could look at you and see.
Oh, man.
I mean, he's
Andy,
all.
You look like you're sitting at the head table at a basketball game calling it right now.
Oh, well, thank you. I will be here in a few hours. We got another one.
Wait, he needs that jacket, that famous jacket.
Oh, he's got it.
Oh, I do. I got it.
It's the yellow jacket, right?
Gold.
Gold. I'm sorry. Is that what you call it?
Jacket, it's a gold. Green jacket.
Gold.
Yeah. And, you know, when they when we unveiled those, and it was a total marketing ploy, like, to just draw attention wearing those gold jackets, word got back to us that other media personnel were going to try and steal one.
Oh.
And there was, like, a bounty for those gold jackets. So we really got to keep those, you know, either keep them on or keep an eye on them. Because, there's a bounty. That's the word.
Is yours tailored for you, or is it, like, so big that you guys have to share? Or is it too tiny?
It looked like a tent. So I took it to a tailor and said, just please do whatever you can to
try. Oh, you did? Okay.
Like, try and make this look like a suit jacket.
I just
please.
Wondered because it reminded me of when Ben joined the fire station and he got somebody's pants that was like 5'6".
Mm. Oh, and I got someone's like, that uniform shirt. Remember that uniform shirt?
Oh, and then he got this massive oversized. So I just wondered with if it was like.
Yeah,
if it actually fit you, but now it does. Okay.
They got our measurements, but you know they're kind of like novelty jet. You know, they're different zany colors and stuff. So,
all right, I want to give a couple quick shout outs before we get started. First of all, have you guys ever heard of Rock Rooster Boots?
Mm-hmm.
No,
I mean,
no.
Look at your shoes.
Yeah, so these guys are
pick
getting,
your feet up and slap them on the table. Come
are getting
on.
A little shout out. You know, remember Randy? Fieldrose Randy, the farmer, he's been on the podcast.
You're not going to forget Randy.
Charles, do you know Fieldrose Randy?
No.
Oh, man, we're going to have to show you that
one.
Oh,
yeah.
Guy's hilarious. He's got a big, pretty big YouTube channel, big social media following, farmer down in Florida, peanut and cotton farmer. But funny dude. But anyway, we've had him on the podcast a few times. But he called me up the other day and he was like, you got to try these boots. And if you're anything like me, mm-hmm. My Instagram feed is full of boots. I don't know if you see them all the time or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm constantly seeing different brands, and they're all fighting with each other, and who's got the better boot, and they're cutting them in half and all these things. And I've seen this one before, but didn't really know a whole lot about him. He's like, I'm going to have them send you a pair. Go online, pick one out. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I always like to have a pair of boots. Mm-hmm. So they're lace-up. They're, you know, shorter, not like cowboy boots, slip-on. They're lace-up boots. I pick one out, get them in, pleasantly surprised. Very nice boots. And they're... price-wise, they're much more affordable than all those other ones out there. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how they last. Okay. He says they last a long time.
Okay.
I mean, it's not hard to take off the boot.
But I'm not
take the boot
that.
Off. We're on camera.
All right. Hold on.
Hope
people are watching this for cinematic value.
Most guys don't want to.
Okay.
Okay. So look at that all zipper. Right. That is smart.
I do like that.
Right? Because no one wants to.
Easy on and off.
You know, that's amazing because.
We didn't treat these first, though.
If it weren't for those zippers. On the side of boots, my 3-year-old, it'll take me about a half an hour to get those boots.
Right.
Those zippers cut it down to about 15 minutes.
Right.
I like that.
So they don't all have the zipper, but I picked the one with it because I hate tying things. Mm-hmm. Also, when I wear boots, like I wear them all the time, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to be able to get them on and off quick in certain scenarios. So the zipper's awesome feature. But anyway, cool boots. So I spoke with them. I was like, man, these things are great. And they said, you know, well, give these to you, just say something about us, you know, whatever. So I got the podcast, want to give them a shout out, gonna put some stuff on Instagram, but they gave us a discount code. So Farm Focused, the website is rockroosterfootwear.com. The code Farm Focused, FOCUSED, all one word, gets 15% off.
Well, so can I get 15% off?
Yeah, you can.
You know, we do all these promos on NCN, and I'm not eligible, you know, because I'm part of the entity putting it on.
Oh.
I'm like, well, I want 15% off. I want 25% off.
And... No, you're included.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we can use our own discount code.
Do they have women ones?
They have everything.
Oh, okay.
I would definitely recommend trying them out. They're super comfortable.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, and then the second thing, Midland Radios. We've talked about them a bunch of times. Midland USA was reviewing some stuff with their marketing guy on our promo code and, you know, the inserts that we're doing in the packaging and seeing if stuff's taking off. And we were looking at a couple of purchases that customers had. And what we were seeing was it's farmers buying stuff. The last one that we looked at was a guy went on there and bought this kit for three of his machines. So three Midland radios, a base station, all the stuff that they're going to need for planting season. He just recently bought it, so it's a cool setup.
Nice. So like that antenna, because I got to crawl up on top of the bin, you know, and get some footage of that.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, cool.
Yeah, that's set up. So MidlandUSA.com, if you're looking for communication devices for your tractors, for your ATVs, even personal stuff, walkie-talkies, portable units, use code FARMFOCUSED, same as Rock Rooster's code, and it's 15% off also.
And I'm telling you right now, what we always use Midlands for is getting into the middle of, you know, wintertime vacations.
Mm-hmm.
We always use those Midland radios when we're skiing. And if we get separated on the mountain, rather than trying to dig out your cell phone or break your cell phone, drop it, whatever,
yeah,
you just have that Midland kind of clip to you here, there, or whatever.
Yeah, because your cell phone's probably not going to work.
Well, and yeah, you got big gloves on and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And also you're just saying, hey, I'm at the bottom, or, oh, I'm over at this run, whatever.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Just kind of a convenient thing to do.
I like it.
So check them out. Support the podcast. Go on the Apple app. Give us a review. We haven't had any of those for a while.
All right.
But yeah, so done paying the bills. We got Charles Barron back. He's a first grade basketball coach.
Oh, I thought you were going to say first grade teacher. I'm like, where are we going with this?
It's my newest job.
Add another title there.
Yep.
There we go.
Charles with FBN. If you've been listening, you've heard him on before, Farmers Business Network. Charles, tell us a little bit about your coaching career.
This is my first time coaching. So I got, I've got a first grade daughter, and she started basketball, and so I said, you know, can you be the coach? I'm like, okay, all right, it's time to be the coach here. I didn't play basketball,
yeah,
but you know, it's first grade, so can't be too hard, right?
Yep.
It's probably the toughest job I've ever had, is trying to corral, you know, eight first grade girls to do the same thing at the same time,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big lesson in leadership, and can you, you know. How do you actually get their attention?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
Can they still travel?
Can
right?
They,
with the ball a little bit?
I mean, you're first grade. Yeah, you're dealing with like, are you allowed to lay down on the court in the middle of the game?
I kind
of
forgot.
You know, are you
okay?
Are you running to the opposite side of the court?
Right.
You know,
what do you let go?
Exactly.
Taking a knee here or there, that's fine.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Do they have enough strength to get to the rim?
They get the ball up. They get the ball up. So the difference between your first game and then like your third game is pretty dramatic. So your first game, you got kids lying down on the court and all that kind of fun stuff. And then by the second or third game, they're getting the principles of the game and can you right now
tell the athletes from the other ones that are like not into it that much?
Oh, there's, I mean,
is there some that are just like gangbusters?
Oh, yeah. No, there you have kids who are you know, super athletic and super, you know, competitive and get it, and they want the ball, and you know, then the hard thing is to get them to not hold
the ball.
And run the ball like the football, and you know.
Yes, right.
So
it's funny you mentioned
it's
that.
It's fun.
Have you coached your kids yet?
Oh yeah. So when this was 2 or 3 years ago now, when Ozzy, we entered him into T-ball.
Okay.
The first thing that comes back is, well, we need help coaching. I said, well, okay, I can help. And the next email I get back is, all right, you're coach of the red team.
Coach.
You're like, wait, I didn't say head coach. I said help.
So I was the head coach of that. And we just went ahead, and it's funny you mentioned the laying down thing. So Ozzy and Kimber are basically a pair. You know, they're a year apart. So we signed her up too, and just, you know, you're going to be on Ozzy's team. first practice, she just got out into the infield and just laid down.
Right.
And she's like, I'm hot. I'm over it. So that was kind of a waste of an entry fee, but still
fun. Oh, my gosh.
It's like a rite of passage. I mean, every...
You did it. I feel like
yeah, every dad for sure and most moms have to go through it. Like, you got to coach something, you know, and just...
You know, and maybe we've talked about this, but I wish the, another rite of passage would be, now you have to umpire, or now you have to officiate the game. When I do these broadcasts and I see some parents standing up and pointing and hollering, I'm like, ooh, I would really like you to be the next game's official.
Right.
You know,
right.
I would just like you to have that experience. Right.
Yeah, I think the refs are a little lenient on the first graders for a double dribble and travel.
Okay. You know, it's,
you're pretty much allowed to be a running back, take the ball, run to the basket, take as many shots as you want.
I love it.
As long as no one's tackling each other.
It's all about having fun, and that's where you got to start it. Like, you can't be blowing the whistle and taking the ball out of their hand.
Right.
Really focusing on letting the little girls have fun.
Yeah.
The funny thing was, like, you know, we'd have these practices, and the practices, no one, like, you can't get them to do the drills. They're all running off to every side of the court. Like, the dads are pulling their hair out. And then you show up to the game, and suddenly they get it, and they're like, they're playing, and they're in it. And you're like, okay, like, hey,
they were listening.
They were listening.
That's good. That's good.
But your daughter has had fun.
I think they're having fun.
Okay.
They seem like they're having fun.
That's the main thing.
Yeah. Good memories for sure. Kids sports, man. I do miss that. That was fun. Our youngest is junior high now, so we don't have any of that anymore, but
yeah.
It was fun.
Come on down. I'll hire you as an assistant coach.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. It was fun, but I don't know about that fun.
I mean, you help on the trap team.
Yeah, but it's not little kids. Like, I'm talking about the little kids stuff is neat.
Yeah. I know.
So anyway, Charles here, FBN. What are we going to get into today, Andy?
Well, man, there's some buzzwords that we just can't get away from. And FBN just came out with their new report.
Yep.
The price transparency report. Guys are getting that out. But I do a lot with the news, you know. So trade wars, tariffs, reciprocal tariffs. I mean, there's things being added on, and I don't know. If you just read the headlines, it's like, okay, well, our economy is going to collapse tomorrow because of China.
Right.
you know? So who better than to maybe talk us off the cliff here or tell us exactly like what's going on than Charles here with FBN.
He's got his finger on the pulse for sure.
Yeah.
For folks who haven't listened to the previous episode and may not know, Charles, can you tell us first of all, what FBN is and what you guys do?
Yeah, and it's great to be back. And so always fun to have the conversations. So FBN's a network of farms. We're a 100,000 farmer member network across the U.S. and Canada. And then our members buy inputs. So we sell inputs online, things like chemical, fertilizer. We're now getting back into seed. We'll have coming up here in a couple weeks. Livestock supplies. You can get pharmaceuticals. You can get feeds. You can get supplies. We're actually adding pet products now, so you can get pet care items. So anything you need for the farm, you can buy online at FBN. You can buy it online, or you can buy it through our what we call community builders, who are like farmers who are sales agents and sell for FBN locally. And then we do a lot of lending to farms. So we do land loans, we do operating loans. We've done over $2.5 billion of credit for growers over the last 4 years. So, you know, really rapidly growing program there. And then we're very, very rapidly growing part of FBN is in sustainability services. So we do all the tracking and verification and then payments and basically administering programs for big grain buyers like ADM and Poet Ethanol to facilitate farmers getting paid for sustainable practices. So if somebody like a Pepsi or a Costco shows up and says, I want to make sure that all the grain going into my products is, you know, no-till or comes from regenerative farms, they turn around to ADM. ADM turns around to FBN, a program called Gradable, and then we administer that out to the farm. And we paid out over $33 million in those premiums last year.
Wow.
Program, so. What do you not do then?
Yeah,
that's what I was saying.
No, you guys are everywhere. That's cool. That's awesome.
Sure.
Yeah. I want to check something real quick. This is a good stopping point, so let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by a company near and dear to our hearts, Farm Focused. FarmFocused.com, FOCUSED. It's the number one provider of branded merchandise for the top brands in agriculture. Folks like Millennium Farmer, Welker Farms, Larson Farms, CalfVet, so many more. Again, check it out, farmfocused.com. Being farm focused is a way of life. It's a brand you can be proud to be part of. Thanks for listening. All right, we're back from a quick break there. We learned during the break that FBN also sells some supplies that can be used for raising chickens.
We do, yeah, we actually do. We sell all types of poultry supplies, incubators, heat lamps, you know, general,
yeah.
Like we have shop heaters, pumps, meters, mm-hmm. you know, basic stuff you need in the shop can get on FBN
too.
That's
pretty cool.
That's kind of a hot commodity right now. Anything to do with chickens or poultry, yeah. with the way egg prices
that's
are shooting.
That's timely,
up.
Yeah.
I actually heard an ad during the Husker basketball game last night from a big cooperative, and they're talking about new chicken feed. You're going to have bigger eggs, stronger eggs, lay more eggs. I'm like, chicken feed? Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I got it.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's getting into it.
Oh, yep. Backyard chickens exploded during the pandemic. So many people started raising them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's smart, man. And everybody, it's funny, like you see some of those memes of like people who have had chickens all these years. And they're like wearing gold chains and they're throwing around dollar bills and stuff. Yeah. They're like finally made it.
You remember Jeremy Odom, the comedian we had on?
Yeah, yeah.
One of his bits that really kind of exploded, you know, in little short videos on Instagram and stuff was him talking about his days at working at a grocery store, and he was the egg man. He could hook you up with the egg. Because I got a couple cartons in the back way.
Nice.
Hy-Vee didn't have much today when I walked by and grabbed some butter.
Most of them
it
don't.
Was like, yeah.
All right, so... we learned a little bit about who FBN is. Andy mentioned the price transparency report. Charles, does this come out once a year, or what's the price transparency report all about?
So this is something we've started doing. This year we've actually done it twice because prices were moving around pretty quickly in the last couple of years. So what we do is we allow members to share chemical invoices, seed invoices, and then they send them in. We anonymize them. We match up all the prices. Mm-hmm. We look at discounts and all the different ways that, you know, you actually get to what the actual final price was that a farmer paid. And then we collate all that data and give an industry report, right? So I think for this report, we had about 1,300 prices that we looked at. And then what you can see is you can see all the price variances on individual products, and you can see price variances within states. So this is something we've been doing 6 or 7 years now. I think this is our seventh price transparency report for chemical. And, you know, we always find these incredible variances between mm-hmm. what two farmers are paying, you know, around the country. And so this year, I think our top variance was 284%, which, you know, that's a 3 times difference in price. And that was
huge.
For Liberty, which is a very, very popular common product that's out there. So that just shows you that even today, even in a competitive market, in a down market like we've been in for the last year, where farmers are really sharpening their pencils, mm-hmm. you still have people dramatically overpaying. Someone was paying, you know, $70 a gallon for Liberty, right? So that is a very, you know, outlier kind of unusual result.
But for someone that – okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for folks who aren't farmers and aren't in the space, Liberty is a herbicide.
Okay, I was just going to say, what is
– a weed killer,
but how do they get to that? Like, how
does that happen?
Yes, I don't get it.
Yeah, so this is where, Frank, this is where FBN came from. Basically, is that farmers would ask us to start analyzing prices that they were actually paying, and we would find these huge differences, and then they'd say, okay, you know, why is that happening? You know, can you get it to me for cheaper? But the reason it's happening is that most of the retail infrastructure in the country still operates on a call me for the price, or you're going to get service from me. Like you're going to hire me to apply your product, and I'm just going to hand you the price sheet. Basically, here's your bill of goods.
Okay.
And so there's actually no negotiation that takes place. You know, you could be, if you're a farmer and you're highly tied to the co-op, you're not shopping around, right? And that co-op is driving those profits mm-hmm. to, you know, go back onto the corporate. There are many, many farmers who are extremely savvy around how they shop around and how they, you know, find the lowest price, and they get everyone to bid, and you get to very large farms or operations in California, and they manage it like a corporation with a professional bidding process. But for the typical operation, they're basically calling up, and, you know, there's not a ton of price negotiation that actually takes place. and there's not a ton of price shopping yeah. that takes place. And that fundamentally happens because people don't post prices. So most of the industry does not actually show you what you're going to be paying until you've called in and you're getting whatever the account pricing is. And that comes with also if you're buying everything from retail, you might also be getting seed, you might be getting fertilizer. And so you think, well, I'm not worried about the chemical price because I'm really mm-hmm. focused on the fertilizer. And you don't realize you're leaving tens of thousands of dollars on the table.
Crazy. Looking at some of these comparisons you have, the one you mentioned, one guy's at $19, one guy's at $70. That's a huge difference percentage-wise. Yeah. But then you look at some of these bigger ones, another herbicide, $460 per pound or per gallon. And then the next one, the top one, is $950. I mean, that's another $500
that
guy's paying. It almost seems illegal. Like, it's wild. Honestly. Yeah.
Well,
that is so bad.
Well, chemical is not the manufacturers don't enforce zones in seed. The way seed is actually sold is that the traits, when you buy the traits that are attached to the seed, the manufacturers of those traits, and there's only three of the trait originators in the market, they actually dictate trait licensing fees by zip code. So it is very difficult in the world of seed for anyone to sell across and out of a zone or across a state line or across a county line,
right?
Because they're basically told, here's what you're going to pay if you're in this zip code. This is how much you have to pay me to license this trait. And so that means that effectively for the majority of traded GMO seeds that farmers buy, almost none of that is sold online. And so that means that there's effectively no interstate price competition where you could actually normalize the prices
right.
to what it actually takes to ship the product out. In chemical, it works a little differently where there aren't those technical enforcements from the manufacturers. So if somebody's paying four times more than another farm, well, they can still buy from FBN. We can ship it out to the farm and they can capture the discount, right? So there's no barriers to doing that. But in the seed industry, it is literally divided up that way to where it's controlled by the manufacturers as to how pricing works in the country. Yeah.
When I hear all these different rules and regulations and cans and what you can and can't do, the word that comes to my mind is racket.
Yeah.
I mean, just, it's a racket.
Yeah.
And you don't want to throw shade at your local co-op or your local seed dealer because he's just a good guy. Uh-huh. He's my neighbor. I graduated with the guy. And he's just playing by the rules.
Yeah.
But how did these rules get set up this way?
Well, Well, the case of seed, the dealer does not have control over some discounts that they could possibly offer you, but they are actually prohibited from selling out of their zone or selling out of their territory. So that may mean, you could be on the border of Nebraska and South Dakota or Nebraska, Kansas, and it could be half as much. Price, you could save $50,000 if you drove down to Kansas 20 miles, picked it up and took it back. And you're not allowed to do that, right?
Wow.
You also, when it comes to seed, you don't actually own the seed. You don't buy the seed.
Right,
you are licensing the intellectual property.
What?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah,
you don't own the seed.
You don't own the seed that you buy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I have so much to learn.
If you want to get in trouble, Morgan, you just go ahead and mess around with corn seed.
Even if you don't own your tractors, right?
Yeah.
Pretty
okay.
much. Yeah.
Okay. So we don't own our houses really either, or we don't own our guns.
ownership is like
what do
a...
we own?
It's an idea.
Okay. Yeah. It's a thought.
It's a feel good.
Well, so in the case of seed, if you are buying seed that has traits on it from one of the big three trait originators, you are buying the license. Technically, you're buying the license to the intellectual property for that year to use it in your location. You are not actually buying the physical seed.
It's very similar to like a piece of software.
Yeah.
Like if you, what would
like our phones.
No, like...
No, like Microsoft Word.
Exactly.
It's a yearly license now.
Yeah.
And every year you got
to
re-up it.
Yeah, you have to pay every year or else it expires and then you can't use
it anymore. But Microsoft doesn't produce something like a seed does, right? We then get a product from
it. You're talking about a tangible product as opposed to something intangible.
Right.
So, yeah, and I think that the tech companies... and software companies and things like that probably originated this idea of these subscription type things. But then, hard goods tangible type companies, like you're talking about, like seed companies and that, have adopted it to their models. And then some have really like contorted that model. Somebody like equipment manufacturers who still make you pay a premium as if you own this thing, but then don't give you
ownership.
Right. You don't actually get the rights to do anything to it, but you have bought it. It's like this weird middle ground.
So what's the consensus? Do we like this? I mean, or is this just what we're used to and this isn't going to change?
It's a big frustration for a lot of farms.
And
it's a barrier. It's definitely a barrier for, you know, farmers getting better prices. And I think some parts of the industry are easier to change than others.
Okay.
What happened, you know, with seed was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, before traits, you had hundreds of seed companies. And they were all local genetic developers who were creating seeds for the local market. There were some regional brands. But you didn't really have sort of like big national consolidated brands. Then when traits started getting developed, the cost of developing a trait was in the, you know, $1 billion to introduce a new trait. And that then limited who could actually produce down to just a handful of companies. Those 300 independent seed companies basically consolidated into three. And so you have a handful of companies that are actually have the financial wherewithal to develop and introduce traits. And then you have 120 seed brands in corn and soybean that license those traits. And they may develop some of their own genetics or work with a genetics source, but they still have to license from one of those big three. And so that then set, if you are using those traits rules set the market. That's why the seed industry in particular has so much control in that.
I hope I'm not the only one that just learned this today. No, there's got to be other people listening, correct? Right?
You see so many parallels,
too. I
really
did not know that.
You know, you mentioned the big three. I just think about beef packing plants and how there's basically three players. You know, like it's like, oh, the model worked for Apple, so we're gonna move it from Apple over here to DeKalb seed. We're going to move it from DeKalb seed over to Tyson chicken. You know, like, it's just, I don't know, it's scary when you look at how it's just all controlled by two or three players, you know?
So then tell me, how does FBN help with this? Like, so you're trying to say that a farmer in California and Nebraska is going to pay the same price?
Yeah, so in the world
through
of...
Through you.
Yeah, in the world of chemical, we can do that, you know, through... We basically have open pricing on the internet. So number one, you can always see what the price is. You don't have to call in and you don't have to haggle and, you know, find out what your price is, get surprised by that. So farmers really like that, that it's just straightforward and transparent. Number two, you can see what market prices are. You can actually go on the platform, the website. You can click on any of these products, and you can see what prices farmers are actually paying, even when they're not buying from FBN, because they share invoices with FBN, and they participate in that data sharing.
Okay.
So thousands of farmers, you know, do that. They share invoices, and they can compare. And then we always show you what FBN's price is. And then we use our systems, our technology, to then line up all the products by their ingredients, because you'll have in a common chemical, like let's just take glyphosate, there might be a couple dozen versions of the same glyphosate product, you know, a 5-pound glyphosate, you know, product on the market, all with different brand names, all with different prices, you know, and producer generally knows, hey, I'm getting a 5-pound glyphosate. So we show you, hey, here's the 40 products that are all identical, you know, by active ingredient. Here's the price range of those, that group of products, and then here's what you can get it for from FBN. So we make it very, very easy. And what that does is that basically sets a baseline price around the country that everyone has to compete with. So when we started, we were sometimes saving farms 50-60%, like just huge amounts of money. We had a farm once tell us they still saved $180,000, like just huge money. And then over time, the national market has gotten more competitive because we created a lot of that baseline transparency. We still found in this report that we measure, if you gave us a price, what the FBN price was at that moment, the average savings is about 32% still.
Wow.
So there's still very dramatic savings. A lot of that's come from switching from a branded product to a generic. But just fundamentally, we are able to offer better prices to more farmers. Now, some people are going to get better prices than FBN. They have a local dealer. The dealer's going to make them a deal.
Gotcha.
Like, you're always going to have that, right? And so, you know, you'll see farmers online complaining, something like, oh, FBN's prices aren't the best in my area. Like, there's going to be pockets of that. There always are going to be pockets. We're never going to be the best.
Right? But that's good.
That's also like showing a validity to it where, like, we're not always the best price.
Yeah.
You know, that all we're trying to do is bring some transparency to it. And I think I really feel like FBN's about to enter into like this golden age, if you will, for lack of a better term, because for the longest time, farmers especially were like, you know, keep your nose in your own business. Don't ask your neighbor what he's doing. The secrecy was kind of like built into it. And now you got Gen Z, Gen X, Gen whatever it is now, you know, that's next generation of farmers coming up and taking over the farm. And they're like, we don't adhere to any of that. You know, we're into edibles. We're into, you know, what, right. what right. my point is, we're getting into a new right. generation where they're right. not playing by that same handbook or rules. And they want to yeah. see what others are doing. They're sharing information, mm-hmm. whether it's on Reddit, whether it's just going down to the elevator and talking to their neighbor. But there's this huge shift in sharing information with your neighbor, the farmstead next to you, isn't like this negative, bad, taboo thing right. anymore. And I think that really is going to play into what FBN's all about.
Yeah, there was a survey this summer I saw that came out from a market research group that said 20% of Midwest farmers were price checking on FBN, basically. So they're using us for price. Now, 20% of the farmers weren't all buying from FBN. We'd love it if they were. They're using us for, you know, price intelligence. And so then the infrastructure that we've built, we have 20 warehouses. They can ship, you know, next day basically to most farms around the country. So everyone can get access to that competitive pricing. And then in the world of seed, that's actually how FBN started, was by analyzing seed data for farms so they could do this kind of comparison. They could see what prices they were paying, and then they could see what yields were actually producing on individual hybrids and varieties on other farms. So they could see which hybrids were actually working on other farms, which ones should they be interested in. So, and then, you know, we now have very excited because we're going to have a new seed partner coming on the platform in 2 weeks. We look forward to announcing that. But there are seed companies who are trying to innovate around the model, and they may have traits, but they may price differently. So they can deal direct to farms, and they are finding new ways that they can innovate in sales, marketing, and distribution and find ways to sell online. So that's going to be a great thing for farmers, because that's just going to give farmers better choices on genetics, really yeah. quality genetics, mainline traits at clear and transparent pricing too.
So this report, was this something like everyone's dying to get? Like, are people waiting for this so they can? I don't know.
Hot off the presses,
yeah. right? Like, is it?
There's always excitement around it. You know, we have about 1,000 farms or so participated in this exercise over the last year.
Okay.
They're sharing invoices. They also get personal price intelligence. So anytime you share an invoice with FBN, you get a score. Basically, that invoice is going to come in. We'll analyze it. You'll see what your savings and how you're benchmarked to the market. So that's available for anyone for free.
Perfect.
I wonder when it comes out, you know, and obviously the farms who shared with you are going to be looking at this because they want to see it. And then that guy that paid that 284% more, he looks at me, he's like, oh shit, that's my price. What
he's
happened?
Gotta be pissed.
Real oh shit moment. That's kind of a good thing. It's a learning moment.
Right.
That's why you sign up.
Oh yeah.
With FBN.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've had many, many, many stories of this where, you know, I'll say, hey, have you ever, you know, compared your prices? You ever gotten the analysis? And I'll say, no, dad's got a deal.
We've got
a deal from the guy. They take care of us. They treat us really well. We're good. I'm like, well, just let's take a peek and like, let's see what it actually is. And then, you know, we found this one, I think I told the story on the last one. We found a big farm. It's like 4,000 acre, big operation, sophisticated in Iowa. And, you know, we found they were overpaying by 100% on a couple of these big products that they were spending $40,000-$50,000 on each. Mm-hmm. Right. And he's just like, okay, I had no idea. We're getting told we're getting a great deal because we're buying all this fertilizer and we've got the, you know, the 10-year loyalty discount, et cetera. And it's still getting
paid. So I think in general.
That's a tough, next time you see the co-op, the conversation.
I think in general, farmers are, you know, a very loyal bunch. So, you know, when they've been working with someone and they trust them, you know, and they believe what someone's telling them. So they're not, they don't automatically think, I need to go double check this.
Right, right.
You know, that's just not the nature of the
And the way I think about it, just like, what would you do when you sell a car or sell a tractor, right? You sell a piece of machinery, you're going on, you know, you're selling a car, you're going on Kelley Blue Book. You know, you're selling a piece of machinery, you're checking that price in Tractor House or 10 other places online, right? You're always going to do that. So why would you not do that with the most critical inputs that are going to drive your entire profitability on the farm?
I was noticing in this report, I don't think you mentioned this, the this price transparency tool on your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is actually a feature on FBN that any farm can use, whether you're buying from FBN or not. You just share an invoice, and when you do that, on every single chemical product on the FBN store, you'll see price intelligence around that product. That's a free service that we provide to farmers, because then, you know, it often shows you, hey, if our price is better, or it'll show you if our price is, you know, not better than what you might be paying. It'll show you your prices, it'll show you what the market price is, and it'll show you what our price is at any given time.
Makes it easy. Yeah. I wanted to ask real quick and go back. I don't know if you guys know anything about this, but we were talking about different prices in different markets for the same goods.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've seen that at, like, grocery stores or Walmarts or something, that they do that. Is it are you guys from, am I thinking right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, that's incredibly common in business to have, you know, there's a feature known as price islands. You see this in gas stations, basically. Why does one gas station have an outrageously high price? It might be in a very wealthy zip code, or it might be in a very, like, isolated zip code where there's no competition. And that's typically something we also see in farming. So you will see in very rural geographies horrible pricing. Like, when they're very far from a location where there's no retail competition, there might be one, you know, player up there. So, you know, some of those very, very far-flung geographies are, you know, great FBN customers. They love FBN because, you know, we're giving them, you know, really, really good competition.
And I could see, you know, in some of those scenarios, a supplier charging a little more for something like that just because, you know, it's harder to get it to them. You know, there's more transportation costs or whatever, but it should be transparent in that, hey, your base cost is the same as everyone else, but there's a little bit extra here because we have more labor, we have more time, shipping. We have more fuel in getting it to you, that kind of thing. but you know, back to the grocery stores and things like that, I feel like I've seen that, and it's strange how sometimes they decide, you know, in certain markets, this is more, this is less. I'm sure it's very analytical. I'm sure they've really dug in and they've figured out this is what this group of people is willing to pay, and this is what this group of people is willing to pay. But it seems like really underhanded.
Yeah,
you know?
Like almost price gouging, you know, to put a real negative. Yeah.
Well, some of the logic behind it in agriculture goes back to, you know, when traits were coming out, the companies had to figure out how to price it. And and you have some regions that are incredibly high yielding, like Illinois, right? And Illinois is always going to have higher yields than Western Kansas, right? It's just more productive. They get more rain. So you do tend to see higher prices in more productive geographies because also farmers are willing to pay more and they're willing to add more items to the crop, whereas the crop budget in dry land is just going to be less.
Right?
There's less margin on the farm to play with. So you are going to see that. And then the thing the companies have to figure out is, how do I stay competitive in a market that can afford to pay very little, you know, if I'm charging one price around the country. So there's some natural price variance, which is okay.
That makes sense. Yeah, people with higher yields and things like that. But on the other hand, I would imagine, you know, the farmer who has the better ground and the higher yields probably looks at that and says, whoa, it's not my fault that I've got that I live in a country with better dirt and more rainfall. Yeah. Why are you gouging me for that?
And,
you know,
you made an astute observation there about Illinois, and they get more rainfall than Western Kansas. And I've always noticed that the crops that get rained on more often typically grow better.
Tend to make more money.
Yeah, make a little bit bigger yield.
Wait, how does that work?
I know, right?
I just imagine that you guys have obviously a lot of customers that love you, but there's got to be a lot of haters out there that are so annoyed with you.
Yeah.
Well, it's classic
disruption, it's business,
right?
There's always been that. You know, a lot of that's from competitors or dealers or farmers who are dealers. But, you know, that I view as, hey, that means we're doing our job.
Uh-huh.
If people aren't complaining on that score saying, you know, that, you know, then we're not doing our job. We're not bringing enough value. I really pay attention to when customers complain about us that bought from us.
Yeah.
Say, okay, the delivery wasn't good, or I didn't get the service I expected, right? We take that incredibly seriously. And so we've every year have, you know, improved on our operations and, you know, the basic customer service that we're providing. And this last year made our 100,000th delivery to the farm.
Wow.
So very excited about, you know, hitting that milestone.
It's probably really expensive, but it's almost like a badge of courage or honor if you get sued by a seed company or something.
You've made it.
We have those scars too.
Oh, you do.
For me, one of the things that, you know, I went through the report that I just kind of blew my mind, and I always knew it was the case, but not on that level. and it's how reliant the Nebraska, the American farmer, is on inputs coming in from overseas, and particularly from China.
Mm-hmm.
It blows my mind that I guess we just can't grow a crop unless we buy a bunch of inputs from China.
Yeah. Yeah, so we really highlighted that in the report here because with all the discussion on tariffs, like, okay, so let's look at how exposed is the farm, you know, to tariffs when we look at the risks that are out there on a farm. So, you know, seed is not going to be exposed. There's seed is, you know, the germplasm is developed locally. When it goes through a breeding and scaling up process, that germplasm is going to be moved around the world. The seed companies will literally fly the seed down to South America, over to Hawaii, as they build up that trait or the hybrid. In chemical, a lot of the base technical product that goes into crop protection is either mined abroad or processed abroad, and then it might be mixed in the U.S. and you know and then you know packaged and final step. But in many cases, you're getting the technical from abroad, or you're getting the finished product itself. And so when you look at the big products in chemicals, so look at glyphosate, 99% of that technical is coming from China, right?
Jeez.
So effectively, you know, there's really like one major U.S. producer left, you know, who's vertically, you know, Bayer, who basically is vertically integrated, has their own mines, and then, you know, does some processing in the U.S. Glufosinate, 85% of that is coming from China. 10% from India, 5% from Germany. 2,4-D, 49% of that is coming from China.
Yeah, so
100%.
Yeah, like 2,4-D,
right.
Half of it's coming from China.
Let's, real quick, again, for the non-farmer. So the glyphosate, as you said, 99% of that coming from China. Probably most people by now have heard the term glyphosate, whether you farm or not.
Yeah.
Because the whole Kennedy thing and this new Make America Healthy thing and whatever you think about that, but he's talked about it. It gets used quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
99% from China, that is wild.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's almost every single farm's using that.
97% of corn acres are traded, meaning they're using a trait that is designed to be worked with an
tolerant
herbicide.
For glyphosate. And again,
why do we need this product?
Well, that's what I was going to say again, so people understand.
Please tell me.
Glyphosate is a product that farmers can spray on their crops that kills weeds, but it doesn't kill the crop.
Yeah.
So the crop,
it's in the crop then.
Well, the crop. Well, not always. The crop is engineered to be able to withstand this glyphosate product, so it doesn't kill the crop.
Okay.
But there's, you know, there's a lot of study, a lot of research, whatever that it. I mean, you spray it on early. It goes away. It works out just like if you give an animal antibiotics and you let them process for, you know, a month or two. So that's a whole different conversation. But just so people understand, this is a weed killer. Glufosinate, 85%. Well, pretty much all of it's coming from out of country. And what's
glufosinate is Liberty. So glufosinate's the primary herbicide for soybean.
Okay.
So you have a lot of glufosinate tolerant soybean.
And then number three was 2,4-D. 49% is coming from China, 19% from Colombia, 24% from India, 8% elsewhere. 2,4-D is?
2,4-D is another herbicide that's been around forever. It's like a very old you know, product.
Yep.
So one of the things that's happened in the last 30 years is as glyphosate became more common, then you had herbicide resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And then so farmers, to manage resistance, would switch back to some older molecules like 2,4-D, which were a little stronger. And so, you know, you have people switching back to 2,4-D. And also, you know, if you are now dealing with the same issue around dicamba, where dicamba is a product that came out, then it's had, you know, various restrictions on it. Then they're switching back to other molecules to figure out how to manage around it.
Man, so you look at all, you know, you look at this arsenal of weed killer, and you see that none of it comes from the U.S. So then you go back to this tariff thing and our, you know, if you want to call it trade wars or whatever. What are you seeing with that?
Yeah, so the basic thing that we've been seeing, you have to go back about 3 or 4 years. So you have when COVID happened and you had the real crunch at the ports. So COVID happened, supply chains got crunched up, the ports got crunched up. That was coinciding at the same time as the Olympics in China. So China shut down production, which then meant you had no product getting made and no ships able to, you know, get into ports in the U.S.
Yeah.
So prices skyrocketed and they went from, you know, glyphosate on FBN this year was as low as $11.99. It was selling for over $70 two or three years ago.
Whoa.
So farmers' expenses skyrocketed 3 years ago. Then what happens when prices skyrocket? Manufacturers ramp up and overproduce, right? There's a classic commodity super cycle. They overproduce. Now you got too much product in the market. You have too much inventory. Mm-hmm. Then what happens? Prices collapse. And then when prices collapse, then retailers and everybody who bought that product at 60, hoping to sell it for 70, you know, loses their shirt. Mm-hmm. And you go through this huge correction in the market and tons of pain. That's what the retail industry is going through right now.
There's
lots of layoffs throughout the industry. You know, very negative earnings from folks around the chemical industry, you know, recently, as this glut of product has worked its way through the system. Okay, so now you get to where we are today, which is basically the industry has been unwinding from that super cycle. Mm-hmm. They've been offloading as much product as, you know, they could. Prices have kind of collapsed and more or less stabilized. We're at basically historic lows for these products right now. And now you have tariffs showing up. But the problem is that 3 years ago, corn was $7, right? Yeah. 2022, 2023. Right? Corn was great prices. Mm-hmm. And so farmers were able to bear that expense. Corn got down below $4 this year, and we're back to, you know, historically low commodity prices. So you have those low prices. There's been very bad income on the farm over the last year. So a lot of risk for farmers. And then you have now the new risk of basically price increases and tariffs. And so as manufacturers kind of work through that supply gut and the retail system work through that supply gut, which caused a lot of pain and, you know, price reductions in the market for the retail world, now what you're starting to see is you're going to start to see the prices going back up. So they're naturally going to start going back up because the market has kind of corrected itself mm-hmm. as to supply and demand. Then you have tariffs coming in. So, you know, we just had calls with suppliers this morning where, you know, you're already hearing manufacturers in China and abroad saying, we're going to start taking the prices up because they think they can bear it, the market can bear it. And then you have the tariff uncertainty that's coming, which could be anywhere from 10 to 25%, you know, atop those goods.
Wow.
And the commander in chief has been floating it out there, 25%. And then he's using a word like reciprocal. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of scaring everyone to death here.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of that, you have one of our big time buyers in China saying, "Well, we're gonna, you know, not buy as much."
Right.
So I feel like farmers are getting it from both ends here. Their inputs are going up, and then also their markets are dwindling or are getting limited because mm-hmm. one of our main buyers is at least posing that they're gonna reel it in.
Yeah, and ag is a politically sensitive demographic, so. It's a great demographic for another country to target. That's why farm goods are typically targeted in these tariff wars, because it's a big block in the Senate. It's very politically sensitive. It's also national security. So you've got trade with China. China's our biggest buyer of soybeans and also then corn. We're number one or two on corn. Mexico, you know, Mexico's our number one or two buyer on corn. I'm forgetting the actual rank at the moment. Then you have Canada. We get potash and fertilizer from Canada, right? We sell pork to China. Mm-hmm. We sell soybeans to Europe, right? Yeah. So American agriculture is an export industry. It's one of America's big export industries, actually. And so there's a lot of interdependencies. And then you have also uncertainties around what's going to happen with programs like an ethanol and what's going to happen with other federal support that has gone mm-hmm. into other parts of the market. So there's a lot of the net result of all that is more uncertainty that hasn't translated yet into prices are specifically going up or markets are going away for farmers yet, right? And so it's when is that actually going to take place and what are we going to actually see happen?
Yeah.
Well, Maureen.
I was just going to say, on all these chemicals that you were talking about, is there like an expiration date? Or no, they are just not expiring?
They can last, you know, they typically can store for a couple years and you're okay. I mean, some of them, you're not going to store them for 5 years, but, you know, 2-3 years is okay.
And your guys', I don't know what other companies are like because I've never been through them, but I went to one of your guys' facilities in Lincoln, Nebraska with Zach, Millennial Farmer. And I mean, that's top-notch facilities. So as far as storage is going to go, they couldn't be in a better environment if you need them to last.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to, as long as you're in a heated environment and they're not exposed to the mm-hmm. cold all winter, you know, then they're going to be, the product itself is going to be just fine. But companies don't want to hold inventory for 2 years.
I was just thinking of like when you were talking about COVID and there was like a surge and then you know, if things back mm-hmm. down and people weren't buying, like, where's it all just being?
Yeah.
Where's it go?
Yeah.
That's going on?
Overhead's a killer.
Yeah.
That was literally happening.
Okay.
And when you got to the end of 2022, early 2023, because companies were so loaded up that we mm-hmm. could call it saying the channel is loaded. The retail channel is just totally full of product. Yeah. The warehouses are all full. Everyone's got too much. And so then the prices collapse.
Gotcha.
Do you know at that time when, you know, China was slowing down production, they were going through the Olympics, those kinds of things, and we were having a shortage of certain products. Do you know were yields affected in that time frame?
The timing in which that happened, that was in between seasons. So that, you know, the ports crisis was in the fall of 21. So the crop was already in the ground, right?
Yep.
And then the Olympics were going to be in the winter, right? So the big fear of that year in 2022 was that product was not going to get to the United States mm-hmm. because they weren't going to turn the factories back on until after the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And so we were okay because we had stocked up and we had gotten enough product to satisfy all our demand. But that was the big fear in that year. And you did have companies not able to fulfill to farmers.
And there was probably a lot of farmers, you know, that would stay on the ball and they were pre-buying whatever. So then they were seeing those higher prices and they might have been holding off.
Yeah. So what we, you know, this is what we've always sort of tried to set our growers up for is the advantage of buying early and planning early mm-hmm. because the whole system, the entire supply chain works better, the better demand signals you can get.
Yeah.
So if we know and we can do most of our sales in the fall, then we can work with suppliers, manage manufacturing and importing and then delivery so that everything is showing up in April when farmers need it.
Yeah.
And that works like a Swiss watch, which is the way you want it.
Yeah.
What gets really tricky is when farmers start delaying the purchases, which is what they do when either prices are declining or that they're uncertain about their incomes, then the system, not just FBN, but everybody has to figure out how do I get ready to deliver an entire season's worth of goods and the farmer still hasn't told me what they're buying. So last year was one of those years. This year, last year, farmers were delaying because prices were sort of declining. This year, farmers are delaying. They are delaying more than average, which we've seen in our buying intention surveys that we do with our growers. But they're delaying because of income in uncertainty. So you have high interest rates. They have to get their loans.
Mm-hmm.
With not knowing what the profitability of the crops are going to be. They don't know yet what their acreage mix is going to be. And so they've said, hey, I'm going to wait on some major purchases. But what that does is then you combine what we're now seeing in China mm-hmm. with, and then the uncertainty on trade, going to see prices going to be going up. At the time they show up, if they wait too long, they're going to show up in March, April, May, and the prices may be back on the upswing, and so they're getting a worse deal. So what we really try to do is give people the best tools so that they can buy early and they can lock in savings and they have a predictable cost. Then they can turn around to the bank and say, hey, look, I know exactly what my input expense is going to be. As long as I can market and sell within this range, then, you know, my profit's going to be manageable, right? So we do things like we have price guarantees on products. We have 0% that they can use so they can take advantage of those prices early and just not be exposed to that risk.
I could definitely not be a farmer. This stresses me out.
Right, just listening to it,
oh, my gosh.
Well, and I thought it was fascinating, the last two big bottlenecks or scares just happened to happen, you know, when it didn't matter much. You know what I mean? So, like, once again, it was a whole bunch of this and that, and it amounted to nothing. Is that what you see gearing up this time around? Like, we're just running all these headlines about trade wars and reciprocal tariffs with China. China's bad, this, that. Or is it going to get hit, squared up a little bit more? Is it going to hit it?
Well, it depends how much of this is negotiating tactics and then what's real, right? Mm-hmm. So tariffs start specifically being applied, then you're going to see the reciprocal come in from the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is this Trump and just the way he negotiates and is doing the art of the deals? What happened last time was when we did have tariffs, we did have a trade war, and then the government had to step in with, the farmer bailout in 2019. So that's then happened as well, which farmers don't want to be in that position and don't like being in that position where, you're having to get a bailout.
Man, it's crazy. What, you know, for folks who are listening to this who aren't necessarily farmers, why should they care? Like, ultimately, what's going to happen to the common person that's not a farmer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, number one, if the cost of production goes up on the farm, that's going to get passed on, right? So that eventually makes its way through the supply chain. And, you know, this election seemed to get determined by the price of eggs, right? Yeah. You know, that was a major barometer for everybody. It's just the measure of inflation. Now, that gets driven by some other things you get into. But, you know, so fundamentally, if farms should be profitable, and they should be profitable in order to keep farmers in business, keep families in, you know, on the land, keep rural America thriving. You want to have profitable farms, right? And their inability to generate profit is either means that's going to have to get subsidized somehow by the government because we got to have food supply, or you're going to have, you know, more consolidation on the farm. You're going to have fewer farmers. You're going to have, you know, larger and larger farms. You're going to have, you know, less smaller farms. And a mid-sized farm now is, you know, 1,500 acres, right? It's not it's not small. You know, that's just a very basic kind of fabric of American society that you don't want to see, you know, erode in that way.
Right.
But fundamentally, you know, if different types of these tariffs or different types of cost increases come in, you're just going to see higher prices at the store, which everyone.
I think we've kind of laid it out, but it's pretty simple math. I mean, if a couple of years ago, if you're selling a product for twice as much as what you're able to sell it for today, you know, you drop your top line income in half. That's a big freaking deal. And then on top of that, the inputs, the cost of that to make that particular product go up. I mean, it's simple math. Anybody can understand that.
Well, and you breezed over really fast. You know, you got to talking, and I think you were talking about glyphosate. You're like, well, it was $11 and some change, and that was per acre.
Oh, right? per gallon.
Per gallon. Gallon. Then you're like, then it got shot up to $70 per gallon. I mean, you can, and how many gallons will a typical gallon cover as far as acreage?
You're going to get about two acres per gallon.
Right? 2 acres. Yeah, right. So, I mean, you're going from $11 to $70. Right. And you talked about a 4,000 acre.
Yeah.
Yeah, do the math.
Yeah.
You know,
right, yeah.
Thousands and thousands
of
dollars.
Deal.
Oh, yeah. So you had, I mean, and that's what you saw couple years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But those were also great years for farmers when commodities were $7. Yeah. Bucks, you know, farms were
afforded very better. Well. Yep.
Can you paint me a picture? You know, let's all go to a happy place here, where
okay, so the beach.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
Where we can get through this without subsidies, where farmers don't have to rely that we stand firm, we take on higher commodity prices, but we still can get through this without all these crazy subsidies like we saw the last go around when we tried to kind of spar with China and Russia and others.
Yeah, so it just a lot of this just comes down to how much of this is posture and like negotiating posture of the government, or is this, you know, reality of what, you know, when stuff starts getting real. And, you know, to keep demand where it has been, you know, for the big commodities like corn and soybeans, you fundamentally have to have export markets and you have to have markets like ethanol.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you start seeing policies that will dramatically weaken either ethanol or export, that's going to be very bearish for commodities and very bearish for farmers. So if you can keep the demand picture there and, you know, keep positive trading relationships with these countries, then that could be good. There's also some barriers with some relationships with countries like with Mexico, where Mexico doesn't take traded corn, and Europe doesn't take, and parts of Europe do not take traded corn as well. So those could get opened up through this as well with the right, you know, bilateral relationships on trade, where you could have some new markets show up, and those would be very positive for farmers.
What kind of blows my mind is the demand in reality, and I'll step back to reality, is always going to be there. People need to eat. You know, governments need to feed their people. So if all of a sudden China's like, well, no, we don't need that corn, or we don't need that pork. Well, yeah, you do. You know, so then what happens?
Yeah.
You know, are people just starving to death? Like the opioid crisis comes to mind, where it's like, well, we made that illegal. Yeah, but you you know, you didn't address the demand. Well, so then it got dirtier.
Well, and basically what happened last time is that, you know, when China started threatening the demand on soybeans, especially, then that production just goes to Brazil, right? It goes abroad,
go.
And then you see you see big projects like China was building railroads to get product mm-hmm. from Brazil all the way to the West Coast to Chile.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you just see a wholesale shift yeah. in the geostrategic,
right.
you know, position, which is, hey, we're going to go line up with this country.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to go get the product. And so the American farmers' competition in that sense is other countries who could either produce yeah. for less or, you know, aren't going to be in getting yeah. into these kind of tiffs.
And that sometimes yeah, that's a great point. That doesn't always get the headlines. Like, China's building infrastructure in India. Why are they doing that?
Yeah.
you know, like, why are they just footing the bill for this nice new superhighway, you know, in, you know, Brazil or wherever?
Right.
And yeah. we'll connect the dots.
Yeah.
What's FBN's stance on those foreign markets? Do you guys do business in those foreign markets? Are you looking at it at all?
We do. Yeah. I mean, so we have done our own business in places like Australia and Brazil in the past in different ways. We had our direct business in Australia. We decided to stop doing that 2 years ago. We don't operate directly in Brazil. But one of the big things we do is actually helping farmers who are participating in export markets make sure their crops are export compliant, basically.
Okay.
So a big example that happened last year was Europe started mandating that soybeans that were going to be sold in Europe were deforestation free. So for environmental reasons, political mm-hmm. reasons in Europe, they wanted to say, we want to make sure that the soybeans that come into Europe aren't leading to deforestation, primarily deforestation of the rainforest, primarily meaning South America,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. So then that's where one of our big programs through Gradable came in. It's a set of regulations called EUDR in Europe. In the EU, and basically what we then mm-hmm. do is you enroll your field, satellites go back, and we look at 10 years of satellite imagery. We make sure that not more than 10% of that field was saw vegetation change on it, and then it's certified deforestation free. And then literally that field is then traced all the way through the system. So when you sell your beans, you can say, yep, these beans are enrolled in this program, and those beans can get sold to Europe.
Wow.
That gave those farmers, I think, up to a 25-cent a bushel premium on the soybeans, and then also, you know, gave them access to the market.
Yeah, right? More markets.
So, yeah,
was
so
that
get more great. Markets.
Does that cost the farmer for that service?
No, they get paid for it. They actually get paid for it.
Wow.
So it's sometimes your mixed popularity among farmers could go, hey, you're making me do something that I didn't want to have to do something here.
Yeah.
So, you know, some farmers really don't like that, and they don't want to be, you know, feel like there's regulations from another country that are making them do something in the U.S.
Sure.
So there's always, you know, some sensitivity around that. But fundamentally, they got paid, mm-hmm. you know, a premium for having EUDR eligible soybeans, for example.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're hitting them from all angles, man.
Yeah.
Coming in, helping all over. Last time, I feel like we talked a little bit about that. Did we talk about you guys helping with like carbon credits and things like that as well?
We don't do anything directly with carbon, but we do all these other programs around regenerative ag and sustainability that aren't valuing the carbon credit, but they are valuing the other things the farmer is doing, like no-till, cover crops, lower fertilized usage, and they are getting a CI, carbon intensity score through that process. And the big thing that FBN does in that is that you have many companies or buyers coming up to the farm saying, hey, you need a CI score. And so they'll hire a consultant, and the consultant will say, here's your CI score. But then that score is not transferable.
Right.
So it needs to work like your credit score. Like basically like, hey, here's my credit. I can take that to any lender, any credit card, any bank, and you know what my credit score is. And so what we've done is, you know, creating a platform that is recognized by all these other major buyers like ADM, POET, and others, so that if you get that scoring, that scoring is like kind of official, and that's something you can take to the bank literally,
right?
You know, and say, here's my CI rating from FBN,
yeah.
and then here's how that can be used to access more markets and more programs.
Very cool.
Yeah, I do get that you're talking about it being sensitive, and I get it. The tail is whacking the dog when you have these entities from Europe telling us what to. But ultimately, the farmer is getting opened up to a couple more markets. So I would think that a lot of thrifty farmers out there and, you know, big operations would dive headfirst into something like this. I mean, if for no other reason, it's just going to give you another place to sell your product.
They are. Yeah, I think many farms jump right in.
Yeah.
they're excited. They're happy to get the payment. There are pockets in the country where there may not be multiple elevators, right? So mm-hmm. they may not feel like, hey, I don't have a choice if I'm going
right.
to, I could do this or I could sell down the street. And in some geographies, they may feel like, hey, I only have one place to sell and that elevator is now making me do this. So that's where you get people start saying, I don't want to do this. But in reality, it's like saying, hey, this is actually then guaranteeing you're going to have a market and guaranteeing you're going to have access. And it's going to be American farm, not a Brazilian farm. Right.
I would think a lot of it, too, is just the unknown. You know, so people hear about these things and they think to themselves, gosh, dang, that sounds like a lot of work.
That's a good point.
I don't know how to handle that. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep doing things the way I've always done it. It's basically worked.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
basically worked.
Yeah, and so the way we handle that is, you know, we've built this whole platform called Gradable. You go onto FBN, you know, any farm can do this from anywhere in the country, free. You go on and you can see all the programs that are in your area. So we bring a marketplace of these kind of programs, and then you just click enroll, and then it'll take you through a couple steps of, you know, how to enroll the farm. You either just upload your field boundaries, you can draw a picture on a map, you can transfer data, or you can call our team and they'll walk you through it. And that's it. It's really not a tough process at all. And so then that's basically the primary step. And then we come back at the end of the year, we do a little validation, and that's it.
You know, that's one thing that I have in common with all farmers is I like easy. I like it.
Yeah. I was literally just thinking that sounds easier than going to the FAFSA website that we have to do for our college kids.
Like, right.
That is a pain nightmare. In the ass. Yeah.
Right.
Just saying.
That's worse than coaching first grade girls.
Yes, exactly.
coaching first grade girls is harder than most things I've ever done. That's what I'm
talking about international markets, right. And it goes back to, well, it's still easier than.
We always find a way to bring this together.
Right. There you go.
So what... Well, first of all, anything else, anything that we haven't discussed that you'd like to today on this particular topic?
I think, you know, just for the way, you know, we're really talking to our growers about it right now is that it's uncertainty. It's just how to minimize uncertainty. Some years uncertainty is price. Some years it's competition. Right now it's geopolitics and what's going to – we just don't know exactly. At the end of the day, America comes through for farmers, right?
Yeah.
You typically can take that to the bank, that the American political system kind of comes through for the grower. But there can be a lot of disruptions in that process. Mm-hmm. And you can get tariffs popping up. You can get trade wars. You can get regulations. You can get surprise regulations like what happened 2 years ago last year with the dicamba. You want to just minimize risk and then that uncertainty. So we're sort of just advising farmers try to take action before that shows up because that's how you minimize that.
Yeah, I've been thinking, you know, as you guys have been talking here, and I just have written down what's the moral of the story, and I think it's that if you know, as you said, in the end, our system is going to take care of farmers. We have to, you know, one way or another. We got to make sure that they don't go under as best as we can. But if you're savvy, you can make a decent living at this. You've got to do the work. You've got to do the research. You've got to find the right partners. Yeah. And I know I'm not saying anything that most of these guys don't already know, but hopefully in listening to a conversation like this, it may motivate some people to say, let me dig in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, and a lot of farmers, you know, for a lot of different reasons, they, you know, people aren't happy when there's bailouts, right?
For sure.
Number one, they're taking pain. And number two, no one wants to feel like you got to have a bailout, right?
Yep.
And so I think, you know, many farmers may also feel like, hey, let's let it rip and let's see what the free market is, you know, and where this thing actually settles out. And I'm competitive and I can be competitive. Many farmers may not want that at all. But you certainly have a lot of people like, you know, see them online, you know, you have guys saying, hey, did you really want a trade war? And said, yeah, let's get it on. Let's see, you know, let's see what we need to do.
See what shakes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have anything else to you.
No. I was really excited to have you back, Charles. So thanks for coming out.
And always.
When I got into that report, the reliance or the way that we buy so much from China and then everyone talking about trade wars with China, I really wanted to get your thoughts. So thank you for that.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love how we laid it out for the common folk. It's very interesting.
Thank you. Yeah. Very valuable. Yeah, I learned a lot today.
You learned a lot. I'm glad. All right. Well, Charles, thanks for coming, bud. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Anything else?
FBN.com, right?
FBN.com.
Pretty easy.
Good point. We almost forgot that. Where do you find them? Yeah. Best place to go, FBN.com. All right, cool. We'll close it out.
All right, peace.
Later.
Thanks, guys.